Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers, and $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey, amigos. You know what's really easy to do and even easier to forget? Please help me out and hit that like button if you're listening on YouTube. And if you're listening somewhere else, what the hell? Pop in, give me a thumb. Say hello while you're at it. It helps me a ton with the algorithm. And besides, it's real nice to see you there. And now, on to the show. Welcome back, amigos. I'm sure glad you showed up. It's National Flossing Day, you know. I was worried you'd be too busy flossing to join me. Speaking of which, Chester, I think you've got a little something in your teeth there. Wait, is that a dog collar? Let's head in, friend. I don't want to be out here when the neighbor shows up. You know, I never did like that dog. Anyway, check out simplyscarypodcast.com and click the Patrons Area button. For as little as $5 a month, you can have our entire catalog ad-free and available to download or stream. Also, being a CTFDN patron is kind of like being a fancy aristocrat, or like a Freemason or something. We even have a secret handshake. It's pretty awesome. That aside, we've got a great story from our old pal Frederick Pangborn. For our new listeners, Frederick sadly passed away last year, but we partnered with his brother Robert Pangborn to keep Fred's stories alive. So without further delay, from author Frederick Pangborn, I give you, With the Rains They Come.
I suppose I should start my story from the beginning, as most stories are so done. It makes no sense starting midway through and leaving the reader questioning certain aspects of the account. It defeats the purpose. At least those are my feelings. My name is Lachlan Fisher, and my story begins in mid-June 1869. My business partner, Thomas Donahue, and myself were en route to see my younger brother, Benjamin, in southern Utah, from the expanded metropolis of San Francisco. They had recently opened a newly developed transcontinental railroad for eager passengers who could now pay a visit to the other end of our glorious country. And we were partaking in only 2 days of the train's lengthy journey east. Thomas and I, unfortunately, were not to see the Atlantic coastline, but were unloading ourselves in Ogden City in northern Utah. From there, we would hop from town to town, traveling extensively southward by stagecoach until we reached a town called Beaver, some 230 miles away. From there, we were to trek west on horseback to my brother's cabin some 15 miles from the town's border. The reason for our visit was that Benjamin had purchased a small lot of land out in the middle of nowhere and pursued the dream that most Americans were chasing by the droves. The dream of discovering gold. A consuming fever that washed over men both near and far as the news of others extracting the noble metal from the ground in quantities out in the Western territories spread like an uncontrollable wildfire. Benjamin had sent a letter stating he had discovered small concentrations of the precious metal in the Western desert and wanted me to aid him by purchasing more land so he may lay claim to what he believed was a prosperous placer known only to him and to share with me in the rewards he unearthed. I promptly replied in a letter stating that I would have to see this land for myself before I considered surrendering any funds to his mining endeavors. Thus, the reason Thomas, a close friend of mine and a lawyer, was accompanying me on this lengthy journey.
I could use some time away from the bustling of this city. A change of scenery and to behold the open frontier would do me some good,
he told me when I initially proposed the idea of him joining me. The train ride to Ogden City had been, as I stated, a two-day ride. The weather was hot and arid. We slept most of the ride, with the continued rocking of our passenger car being a prominent catalyst to our frequent naps. Games of solitaire with a fading playing deck of cards that Thomas brought along, and conversation regarding the possible business advantages of a land purchase passed the time from our departure of the crowded streets of San Francisco to our emergence into the dusty, desolate stretches of land at the opposite end of the spectrum, east of the city. We had pulled into Ogden City on a Thursday. Passengers loaded and unloaded as the train was watered and restocked with coal and other essential supplies. It was here that we hired the first of many stagecoaches to take us south of the state. We paused briefly to take in the sights of Salt Lake City, but Thomas was eager to continue our trip, stating,
"If you've seen one city, you've seen them all."
The further we distanced ourselves from the state's capital, the less the towns became frequent. We noted that a large populace of Mormons had taken to the state's vast lands compared to California. At times we were forced to stay at a town's local hotel until a coach would arrive from another town to carry us further southward. While being held up in the town of Fillmore, we had unintentionally been spectators to a man being shot dead in the middle of the street, and in broad daylight at that. It was the first time either of us had witnessed a murder, especially one that occurred only a stone's throw from where we stood. The sight made us realize that perhaps the crowded streets of the city were not such a terrible place after all, compared to the endangerment of frontier life that we were subjecting ourselves to. We later overheard the locals gossiping that the man's death had resulted from a simple card game of poker. Our dust-choked and sweltering journey had taken us just over a full week to reach the small town of Beaver. It was there in a quaint hotel named Beaver Valley Hotel that Thomas and I took up residence until we could rent horses and make our way to Benjamin's cabin. As we hauled our luggage from the coach and into our rooms, we decided to rest in town for a day or two before making our way west on horseback. The wondrous journey here from Ogden City was carried out under the summer's blazing sun, and it had been a weary one that seemed to drain the strength from us. The winds from the Pacific were non-existent out here in the dry, baked, endless stretches of prairies. It was duly decided that we would rest in town until we were up for the 15-mile ride to my brother's isolated dwelling. It was on our second day in the small, predominantly Mormon town that we were directed by the hotel proprietor, a Mr. Holbrook, to the stable and blacksmith across town where we could obtain horses. It was there that we were introduced to Garrett Piper. Piper ran the stable and was also the town's blacksmith. He was a tall, lean man with enormous arms built from the years of working the iron. He was a good 10 years older than Thomas and I, Thomas at 33 and I at 34, and sported long, unkempt hair and an equally unmaintained beard. We informed Piper of our situation and the need for 2 sturdy horses for our ride. It was only when we told him of our destination did he show any concern.
"What you heading up there for?"
he asked. "My brother has a small stake of land and a cabin there. He's been there since December, I believe."
"Oh, I know him.
He comes into town occasionally for supplies. A young man, right?
Yes, he's 28. Poppy rejected a long black stream of tobacco and spit across his shoulder.
He sure picked a hell of a place to settle down in. Nothing good out that way.
How's that? I asked.
That land out there.
He began as he stared out to the western horizon.
It's not good. The Navajos even stay clear of it. Especially during the rainy season. That's when they come out.
When who comes out, Mr. Piper?
It was now Thomas who spoke. Piper broke away from his stare and looked at the two of us.
Never mind that. I'll rent you the horses, but I want them back by the end of the month. Don't want them there when the rain starts up.
I don't understand, Mr. Piper. What happens when it rains? The area floods?
Ain't no floods. You just don't want to be out that way when the monsoon season starts up. And neither do my horses. They come with the rain. Understand?
His tone became as stern as the look that had shaped his face. Not a problem, we both answered, not bothering to inquire about who they were. The following morning, we picked up the horses and the straightforward directions to the cabin from Piper, as we intended to make our way out of town before the sun was at its peak and the overbearing heat at its full potency. He instructed us to go due west toward the distant mountains. Approximately 5 miles out, we would cross a stream and continue until the land rose. At the top, we would be able to see the cabin that would sit slightly to our right. It seemed simple enough. Thomas checked his pocket watch as we rode through the outskirts of Beaver. It was just after 8. The morning ride had proved to be a delightful experience. The rising sun brought out the multiple shades of brown, orange, and red of the area's dramatic landscape under a blue, cloudless sky. Rust-colored rock formations rose in the not-far distance to the north as we crossed the shrub plains to the stream. The cold waters lazily flowed just above the knees of our horses as we steadily crossed. The entire ride took us just over 2 hours as we climbed the rising hills, and as Piper had stated, Benjamin's cabin was visible just a few hundred yards away. The log cabin stood in the center of a clearing free of shrubs and large stones. A stone fireplace was crudely erected along its side and leaned just slightly. A tendril of gray smoke rose from it, serpentine-like. Weathered wood shingles covered the roof and stretched out onto the front porch, which was propped up by 4 sturdy pieces of timber. A small makeshift barn with a small corral attached had been constructed at the far edge of the clearing. As we rode closer, I saw no signs of Benjamin.
How much land does your brother have?
Asked Thomas.
10 acres. He used up everything he had just for that. Now he's looking at 10 or more if I decide to put down the money. He believes that a shallow riverbed near here will pay out.
When we entered the clearing, I called out Ben's name, but the cabin remained silent. Dismounting, we tied our horses to the porch railings and proceeded up the porch stairs, which creaked under our weight. I knocked once, and when I heard not a sound from beyond the thick wooden door, I unsecured the primitive latch and let myself in. The one room abode was as one would picture it, rustic and crude.
Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers. $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
The few pieces of furniture were basic and plain. A single bed to the left, a table and two chairs centered, and the irregular fireplace to the right with shelves of basic provisions. Mining tools used for panning and sluice boxing propped up against the far wall with a pick and shovel. As I suspected, there was no sign of Benjamin.
It would appear that Ben is out,
Thomas commented as he made his way past me and into the cabin, eyeing its murky interior. It would appear so, I had replied as I looked back from the cabin's threshold and back out onto the landscape. I'm sure he'll return shortly. The sun was reaching its peak. During our wait, we unloaded the saddlebags from our horses and brought them inside. Thomas searched the shelved provisions and was preparing to make coffee. I stood on the porch and searched the scorched horizon for a sign of my brother's return. As time passed, we made ourselves comfortable in the shaded confines of the cabin and out of the sun's suppressing heat. Thomas produced his faded playing cards from his pocket, and we passed the time with hands of poker. It must have been close to 3 when the faint sound of an approaching horse drew our attention from my winning hand. Walking out onto the porch, we caught sight of a man tying his own horse to a hitch next to ours. It wasn't until he removed his wide, flat-brimmed straw hat and red bandana from his face were we able to truly identify Benjamin. His clothes covered in dust and dirt, his blue eyes and shaggy blonde hair stood out against his sun-bronzed skin. He smiled as we stepped out to greet him.
Welcome to Utah, gentlemen,
he laughed. Thomas and I quickly descended the stairs, the 3 of us shaking hands and patting each other on the back. After many welcoming words, we helped him unburden his horse by removing the tools and gear secured across its back. Benjamin pulled a lever-action Winchester from its scabbard attached to the saddle, and I inquired about the weapon since I had never known him to ever use one. He had plainly stated that one needed some protection out here, and reminded me we were not back in San Francisco. I agreed with his reasoning, and we retired back into the cabin where Benjamin was all too eager to delineate his laborious efforts and time while away from civilization. It seemed by his accounts that he had been quite industrious while living out here in the desert plains. He explained of his initial findings of gold in the hills a few miles from his cabin, and the discovery of more in a shallow stream bed just further past. He was also intent on showing us the fruits of his labor. After pulling the shutters closed for an overly secure feeling of privacy, he pulled a small cloth bag from his pants pocket and carefully spilled its contents onto the table which we stood around. Numerous gold nuggets of various shapes and sizes, the largest the size of a small marble, poured out onto the wood tabletop. Thomas guessed there being a good 8 ounces before us, perhaps 10, as he fingered the contents. Benjamin's eyes gleamed as he described how and where he obtained the precious metal and the vital urgency to gain the surrounding lands before others were aware of his findings. I scratched my head and suggested that the 3 of us ride out to this stream bed tomorrow and survey the land in the area. The others agreed, and we quickly settled into indulgent conversations, mostly catching up on the last 6 months since Benjamin had left to pursue his ventures in the desert. The day eventually wore on, and we sat about discussing everything from the weather back in San Francisco to the residence in Beaver. Benjamin had started a pot of stew he had been meaning to prepare, and Thomas was seated near a window enjoying his pipe and watching the magnificent sunset. He had commented on the experience being beyond words. It was then that I brought up the conversation Thomas and I had with Piper back in town. It was a matter that, for whatever reason, still itched at the back of my brain. Ben, has there been anything odd out this way since you've been here? I began. He was tasting a sample of the stew with a large wooden spoon.
Odd? In what way?
It was Thomas who commented from his window seat.
And Mr. Piper back in town said something about the land out this way being...
He searched for the correct wording.
Not good.
Not good?
Nonsense. You've seen what I found out there, and this is just a small sample of what lies in the ground. No, these lands are magnificent.
He also said that the Navajo stay clear of the area,
Thomas added, his pipe clenched in his teeth beneath his broad mustache. Benjamin sighed and placed the lid back on the pot.
Superstition. That's all. When I first settled out here, I knew a native who helped me with the construction of this cabin and stable. He had a peculiar name, so I just called him Joe.
And this Joe, he informed you about this superstition? What was it? I asked as curiosity tugged at me like a clinging child. Benjamin pulled up a chair from against the wall and sat backwards, his arms folded over its back.
He was a little spooked about this area when I first started working with him. Said something about this land being sacred, but not in a good way.
Cursed?
Yeah, I guess that's a way of putting it. He said that his great-grandfather was a big chief back in the day, and when he was small, he would tell him that these lands belonged to things that lived here long before the Navajo ever found their way here, long before any man stepped foot in this land. Things that slept in the earth. Piper mentioned something about the rain, the rainy season. Said they come with the rain,
Thomas recollected.
Yeah, I heard that too. It's all just Indian superstition, trust me. Full-blown horse shit. I've been here since, what, December? And I have had no issues.
Was there more of this superstition? I pried. I loved a good story, even if it was pure fabricated lore.
Lachlan, this land is prosperous, I tell you. I can feel it. Don't shy away from some silly Indian tale.
I showed y'all what's out there, Benjamin insisted. No, that was not my intention at all, I assure you. The story simply fascinates me, nothing more. Please continue, I sincerely responded. Benjamin hesitated and looked over his shoulder at the cast iron pot near the hearth of the fireplace, debating.
Yes, Ben, please continue,
Thomas said, as he tapped ashes from his pipe on the outer portion of the window.
I too love a splendid story, even if it is rubbish.
Benjamin spoke slowly, as if trying to retract the story from his memory correctly.
Joe, that is, had said that these things lay sleeping just beneath the ground. They can't come out until the rains have fallen. A good amount has to fall and soak into the dirt to wake them up, like in the rainy season.
Pardon me, Ben, but out of curiosity, when is the rainy season in these parts?
Asked Thomas as he refilled his pipe.
Right about now. Usually around July and August are the seasonal months for the hard rains.
Thomas lit his pipe and nodded for Benjamin to continue, satisfied with the answer.
That's about it, really. Apparently these things come out of the ground during the rains and go searching for people. People that walked above them as they slept. The water wakes them up and they feed during this time before the rains move on. Not much else. Like I said, it's horse shit.
Benjamin shrugged and turned his attention back to the pot. I stared down at my boots even after Benjamin had concluded and returned to stirring the stew. A feeling as if I had just missed something kept my sight concentrated on my worn boot tips. Then it came to me. I looked up to Thomas. I suppose that's why Popper wanted his horses back so soon. Next week would technically be July and the beginning of monsoon season. You think he's worried about these things in the story? He said they come with the rain.
Who can say?
Thomas replied.
Those town people may be just as superstitious to those Indian legends as this native fellow Joe was. Remember, these are simple people, Lachlan. They are far from civilization as we know it. Literally miles and miles from the next town and other people. They're isolated and scared.
perfectly normal behavior.
I guess, I said with little assurance.
Who's hungry?
Benjamin interjected as he set the pot of steaming stew on the center of the table. That evening after our meal, we lit the oil lamps against the growing darkness and carried on our conversation of tomorrow's preparations. We later did a last check on the horses, securing the cabin and rolling out our bedrolls onto the wooden floor planks. It was just after 10 that night. The next morning consisted of a breakfast of black coffee, dried beef jerky, and a few leftover biscuits. Not the most wholesome meal I've ever had since leaving the city, but it was all Benjamin had on hand until his next supply run into town. We suggested possibly riding back into Beaver later that afternoon after we had ridden out to the stream bed, if time permitted. If not, then tomorrow. Loading up our horses, we made out for the side just as the skies began to lighten. As if on cue, our ride out that morning was met with a cloudy sky and little sun. The air still held on to its nightly chill, and the dark gray clouds that churned in the far-off distance ahead of us suggested that we may very well be met with rain sometime today. The ride to the area where Benjamin had extracted the gold was only 45 minutes away, a mere stone's throw compared to the distances I had to travel in the past week. The shallow stream bed carved its way down between two drop-offs of approximately 10 feet. The crystal-clear water appeared to creep slowly southward and perhaps 3 or 4 inches at its deepest. It was as Benjamin had described. We toured the area, noting the terrain that was common for this part of the land. Besides the drop-off into the stream bed, the surrounding land was relatively flat with slight rolling hills of dirt and dried shrubs. Taking the path down into the stream itself, we secured our horses on a section of dried bank and proceeded to getting our hands dirty as Thomas and I were given a lesson in fundamental panning and sluicing. For most of the day, we submerged our bare feet in the chilled waters, pant legs and shirt sleeves both rolled up as we toiled in the sands beneath the water. Thomas seemed to enjoy the work as much as Benjamin. I, however, found my back aching from constantly being bent over, and within the hour, I had had my fill of sifting the wet sand. It was just past noon when the first roll of thunder echoed out across the darkening skies. As the two continued their work, I surrendered my undertakings and walked back onto the slender bank to the horses. I stood stretching my back and listening to Thomas and Benjamin's sporadic banter as I watched the clouds passing overhead begin to turn from a light gray to shades of black. Thunder erupted again and was nearing. I suggested making our way back to the cabin before the rain arrived, and was met with laughing comments about my melting like sugar should I get wet. I was not a laborer, I was an accountant. I returned their comments with a half-hearted laugh. Quantities of the metal had, to our luck, been pulled from the stream bed during our time there, suggesting that a purchase of the land may very well prove a possibility. Thomas had taken to the work with much enthusiasm, and due to the discovery of his own small finds, now showed a fervent interest in possibly investing his own personal funds and merging them along with my own. It wasn't until the sky suddenly opened and the rain fell in buckets, as the term would suggest, that they retreated from the shallow water and joined me on the bank. It was now I who hinted at who was built of sugar. Together we laughed, taking shelter under a shelf in the small cliff face. By Thomas's pocket watch, we had waited 15 minutes before we concluded that the rain was not about to break anytime soon, and it was best if we were to make our way back to the cabin, the rain subsiding slightly upon our decision. Donning our boots and loading up our tools of the trade, we had no other choice but to succumb to the pouring rain during our ride back.
Staying dry was far from an option at this point. Benjamin used the melting like sugar analogy again and laughed at his own joke. We headed back up the ascending trail in the side of the drop-off just as the rains were softening the earth and ledge, causing portions to break away and fall into the stream as the horses made their way cautiously upward. We casually retraced our way back. As we were already soaked to the bone, moving with haste would prove to be nothing more than senseless. Despite our saturated condition, though, we remained in wonderful spirits due to our findings. Benjamin, who led the way, excitedly kept turning back to us and repeating, "I told you so!" And this only lifted Thomas's own exuberant and newly found passion for gold mining, as he continuously replied,
"I never doubted you, lad."
I had to laugh, as they were as delighted as two children rushing down the stairs on Christmas morning to meet their cornucopia of presents beneath the tree. Though my feelings about the day's outcome were equally jubilated, I kept my emotions in check when regarding to physical displays.
What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Without warning, Benjamin's horse fell suddenly forward in an abrupt lurch, the immediate and unexpected actions pitching him from the saddle and roughly to the ground. The two remaining horses reared up in distress to the sudden display in front of them, nearly causing Thomas and I to be tossed from our own mounts. I pulled hard on the reins and moved my horse to the side and could see that his horse had fallen in some type of hole. Both of its forelegs had sunk deep into the muddy earth. Before I could react to the situation, I witnessed something that froze me in my saddle. There was something emerging from the ground, from where the horse had sunk. A large shape was rising from the muddied earth and reaching up for the horse. Words were lost at the description of the shape. But the best that could be said was that it was of a humanoid shape that appeared to have been woven into form by gnarled roots and vines. It pulled itself from the hole in which the horse had fallen and was wrapping its arm like appendages around the colt's wide neck. The horse flailed as the shape pulled it deeper into the wet soil. The twisted appendages seemed to grow longer, lengthening and wrapping themselves around the colt's turning neck as it tried to wrench free. Through the rain, I heard Benjamin and Thomas shouting, but their cries were lost to my ears as I watched in hypnotic terror and heard Piper's words playing through my mind like a dirge. They come with the rain. The shape now had the entire portion of the horse's head entangled in its expanding rooted clutches. The vine-like tendrils grew and moved across the horse's head and neck, coiling about it like some organic net. I could see the roots stretching and pushing into the animal's eyes, ears, mouth, and nose. Blood flowed from the penetrated orifices. The horse screamed in a piercing, bone-chilling wail that snatched me from a horrific trance. Benjamin was stumbling toward his horse in an apparent effort to free it from the shape's grasp. Thomas and I shouted at him as we struggled to maintain control of our own frightened horses who pitched and bucked in panic. By the time Benjamin had reached the horse, the shape had lifted itself out of the ground even higher, and the entire front portion of the colt was now wrapped in its entwined tendrils. The horse had ceased its flailing as the roots forced their way into the animal's skull, burrowing their way into the brain through the eye sockets and coiling about the upper vertebrae as they stabbed into the inner tissues. The shape lifted its head toward Benjamin as he neared. With its arms committed to enveloping the horse, it could not stop him as he pulled out the Winchester from its scabbard in a forceful wrench. Stepping back, he worked the rifle's lever and chambered a round, and fired in a rapid succession into the shape. Portions of the shape's twisted root form exploded from its body in fragmented splinters. A few of the rounds struck the horse in his wild barrage of firing, killing it as if it were not already dead. The rounds that struck the shape seemed to only make the creature flinch as they failed to cease its attack on the horse.
Ben!
Thomas had screamed through the chaos. Ben unheedingly kept firing until the hammer was falling on an empty chamber. That was when our situation turned even more dire. Simultaneously, the ground beneath both Benjamin and Thomas gave way. Benjamin had suddenly dropped up to his knees as the ground fell away and another shape appeared. Benjamin screamed as the shape wrapped its arm-like limbs around his waist and the roots started their quick expansion over his body. Using the rifle as a club, he tried to beat at the thing that was now engulfing him in its grasp. The shape had emerged to his side and was holding him close, preventing his attack to deliver any effective blow. Being that he was smaller than the horse, the shape seemed to overpower him with relative ease. Its limbs now wrapping about him like the crushing coils of a python as they encased them. His one arm was now pinned to his side, the rifle falling harmlessly to the ground. I could only watch in stricken panic as my only brother was being encased in the roots and vines. My horse spun in circles as I tried to maintain control. I glanced toward Thomas, who was now calling out my name. His horse was now in the deadly process of being sucked below, as another shape now rose from the mud. My mind was racing with fear as I tried to gain control of both my mount and my senses. I was lost in the mountain chaotic dilemma that was growing worse by the second, and flinging whatever ounce of bravery I had into the sinking mud with the horses. I was rapidly being transformed into a frightened coward. As my horse spun around again, I managed to look back to Benjamin. The shape had completely encased him in roots. He looked as though he were wrapped inside a mass of a brown vine-like cocoon. Only his one arm stuck out, his fingers limp and drooping from the listless hand. The roots, like the horse, had worked their way into his body and were sucking the life from him.
Lachlan!
I turned in my saddle and saw that Thomas had leapt from his horse and was just in the process of being taken down. I reached out and he gripped my hand as I pulled him up onto the back of my mount. Without hesitation, I loosened the reins on the horse, and it instinctively rushed forward and away from the carnage taking place. Thomas sat behind the saddle, his arms wrapped tight around my waist as the horse galloped hard through the rain and muddy terrain. How far we rode, I could not say. Time seemed meaningless, insignificant. Eventually, the horse's sprinting stride slowed to a trot. Steam rose off the back of the animal's neck from overexertion, and it decelerated, catching its breath, the danger no longer being present. It was then Thomas spoke in a voice as gasping as the horse's breathing.
Lachlan, what happened back there? What were those things?
I have no idea. I've seen nothing like that before in my life, I replied, staring ahead and yet seeing nothing.
Those things must have been from the Indian legend. They had to be.
I could feel his head rest on my back, could feel him sobbing.
Ben. Poor Ben.
We need to get to the cabin, then we can head into town for help, I said, in a flat, lifeless tone. As I had stated, I had no idea how long or how far we rode. The rolls of thunder were becoming fainter as the rains moved further out onto the distant plains away from us. Sometime afterwards, I cannot recall when, the rain had stopped completely. After our prolonged silence, Thomas wearily spoke again.
I have read about some plants appearing to have died under extreme weather conditions, only to be in some sort of dormancy or
hibernation. Not dead, but sleeping. And very morphologically active. They need only their environment to return to its state of normality for them to germinate. Or awaken and continue to grow. That's what those must be like. They seem more plant than anything.
I said nothing. All I could picture was Benjamin in that cocoon of roots, his lone arm protruding, his muffled wails silenced from within by the pouring rain and screaming horses. Lord, that screaming. Never before had I ever heard a horse wail out in such a way, and never again did I wish to, as long as I lived. Something caught my eye. I shook my head and awakened from my dreamlike state to see the cabin in the distance. We were approaching from the backside. Despite our blind fleeing, the mare had redirected itself and found its way back. The cabin, I stated softly. I could feel Thomas leaning to the side to look.
Thank Christ, he muttered.
The clearing at the cabin was littered with puddles, remnants of the passing rains and a reminder to us of what it had brought with it. The horse was slowly guided to the front porch where Thomas slid off and landed on unsteady legs.
I still can't believe any of this,
he stated more to himself as he sat on the porch stairs. I did not reply to his rhetorical statement, but climbed from the horse and hitched it to the porch railing. As Thomas had plainly stated, the entire ordeal was surreal. I would have easily passed off the day's horrific events as some desert-related hallucination if it were not for the absence of Benjamin and the two horses. Reminders, like the surrounding puddles, of the reality of it all. We should feed this horse before we head into town, I said in a dull manner as I eyed the animal.
I'll fetch a feed bag from the stable and bring it over,
said Thomas as he pulled himself up with a heavy sigh. I asked if he wanted me to take care of the horse, but he waved me off and trudged off to the stable. His shoulders slumped forward, his head bowed, his exhaustion all too plain to see. I decided I would bring the horse to the stable anyway and fetch some water for the trough next to the stable doors. I felt a twinge of guilt letting the man take on the chore alone. The least I could do was bring the horse over and water it. As I started loosening the reins, the mare suddenly jerked its head up and leapt to its hind legs, pulling the leather from my hands in a burning yank. Behind me, I heard Thomas yell out. I turned in time to witness him fall to one knee deep into the ground and the muddy sand buckle as something pushed up from beneath it. I froze. It was the noise of the colt bolting off that made me quickly turn back to find it racing past the cabin and as far away as it could. The shape, like the others, had snared another victim. It was lifting itself up and its one arm was slung across Thomas's chest and the other around his waist as it embraced him from behind. In a futile effort, he tried prying the lengthening vines as they grew across his torso and up his neck into his face. He screamed out my name for help, but I stood fixed. All I could do was watch as the roots webbed out over his face and entered his mouth and nose. He forced his eyes closed tightly, but the tendrils squeezed their way in regardless, drawing blood and causing Thomas to scream even louder. With his mouth open wide, the vine slipped easily in and pushed down into his throat. His cries became gurgled and his body thrashed about as his insides were being impaled. My lips quivered as self-preservation held me to the spot, refusing to subject myself to any rescue attempt or to be put into harm's way. I must confess that I am indeed a coward by all extents. Suddenly, the ground heaved slightly underfoot, and I instinctively jumped like a startled cat onto the porch steps as a hole opened where I had just previously stood.
I scurried up the steps and onto the porch itself as a shape rose. Clumps of wet sand fell away from it as it became erect. A nightmarish fable that was now proving its reality. The shape held the loose properties of a man in the aspect of having a head, shoulders, and long arm-like limbs. The head tilted upward. A face, a gnarled mesh of plant-like vines and roots, with a single wide, lidless eye peering from behind the entanglement. A large human eye that stared into my own. My boots slid as I madly pedaled to the door. As I flung it open, I looked back before I entered the cabin. The shape was crawling from the earth and onto the steps. I slammed the door and fastened the latch. Once inside, I placed a beam of lumber across the door and began throwing what little furniture was about against it. We had already sealed the shutters before we departed in the morning. Outside, the shape pounded on the door. Something started banging on the shutters behind me. I whirled about. In a fear-stricken state, I rushed to the side of the fireplace and curled up into a ball against its solid rock surface. I waited for only God knows how long, balled up with my face buried between my knees and arms wrapped over my head as the shapes continued beating and pounding on the cabin's exterior, testing it for an area where the wood would easily give way. Long after the hammering had ceased, I remained curled up in a tight ball. When I eventually found the courage to pull my head up and look about, I saw that night had fallen. Sunlight no longer seeped through the countless spaces in the cabin's walls. A deathly silence hung about the room, the soft crackling of the dwindling fire casting a weak light about the cabin. As I quietly uncoiled from my ball, I tried to collect my thoughts and figure out my disposition. No matter how I played out the many scenarios, they each ended in the grim reality of me being trapped in this remote cabin with depleted rations and no water. The only shining light on my doomed predicament was that the horse might make it out and find its way back into town. Perhaps Piper would acknowledge that something had gone afoul out here and come in search for his other mare. Maybe he would bring others from town. He knew where the cabin was located, so it was a distinct possibility of that one lone scenario playing itself out. It had to. If not... I found a blank notebook in my belongings. I had brought it along in case I needed to jot down any reminders regarding the property. I'm using it now to document my accounts here, hoping anything happens to me, this would be a final warning to others. I cannot begin to try to speculate where these things originated from, or what they truly are. Any attempt would be a foolish theory on my behalf. The rains, unfortunately, have started up again, and I can hear them moving about against the cabin. From beneath the cabin, they're pushing upwards against the floorboards. The groaning planks are bending and cracking against their might, and I can plainly see the nails pushing out of the wood they once secured down. They have discovered the weakest part of the structure. The barrage of poundings against the cabin have begun again. The rains must have rejuvenated them. They know I am in here, and they are hungry.
And that was With the Rains They Come by Frederick Pangborn. Frederick Pangborn was a short story author with over 100 stories to his credit, and the majority of them in publication. He was a retired law enforcement officer and former U.S. Marine. And again, a special thanks to his brother Robert Pangborn, who's partnered with us to keep Frederick's legacy going. Robert himself is an amazing artist who we hope you'll check out. You can find him on Facebook as R.F. Pangborn. That's simply spelled P-A-N-G-B-O-R-N. And at PangbornRF at Instagram. His paintings are genuinely horrifying. Thanks, Robert, and thanks, Fred. Gone but not forgotten.
And do old Drew Blood a favor, would you? Subscribe to his podcast wherever you do your listening and leave him a 5-star review and a kind word, even if you're listening on YouTube. He needs soldiers on all fronts to win this battle, and he appreciates it. To hear a premium ad-free edition of tonight's and all the other episodes, visit SimplyScaryPodcast.com today and click Patrons in the upper menu. You'll find yourself at ChillingTalesForDarkNights.com, where you can become a patron for as little as $5 per month and get access to their entire audio archive, all ad-free and available to download or stream. Thank you for your time and for supporting our sponsors. When you support our sponsors, you support this show. If you happen to use Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or YouTube, you can follow and subscribe to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights there, where you'll get all the latest updates and new releases and have the chance to interact with them each and every week. Oh, and you can find Drew Blood on Facebook and Instagram, and sometimes Twitter. The Drew Blood's Dark Tales podcast is accepting submissions, friend. If you've got a story or two you'd like to be featured on the show, send it to drewbloodhorror@gmail.com. If selected, you'll get the full treatment, 10 bananas.
Well, I'm afraid this is where we part ways, at least till next week. So grab a drink for the road, friend. And if you see the neighbor looking for his dog out there, do me a favor and point him in the other direction. So may the wind be at your back, and may the road rise up to meet you. Hit that like button, for in small gestures lies great fortune. And of course, go fuck yourselves. Good night, my dear friends. Good night.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on Spin Quest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.